You're listening to another episode of HR Talk. It's our pleasure to be back here for you this week. And in this week's show, we're going to touch a topic that's near and dear to the hearts of Rick and myself and many others with a special guest, veterans, this week on HR Talk. Ricky, how you doing out there, sir?
I am doing amazing.
Yeah, well, amazing, that's not what I heard. I heard you might not be feeling the best lately. You doing okay? Do I need to put together 5 1Ks to raise money for you or something? You doing good?
Oh, 5 1Ks?
Yeah, 5 1Ks. Yeah, it's just a brief stop at the end of each 1K. You have a beer and you keep going on, you know. All funds and proceeds go to the Ephraim Baez College Fund, you know.
Even if I was feeling well, I would want to do that regardless. That's a great idea.
Yeah, they're like little mini PFTs.
That would be great.
Hey, so Rick, it's not just you and me on the line today, right? We've got Erin down in the house, huh?
Absolutely. We have Miss Erin Emery. Let me tell you about her.
All right.
She is a 20-year veteran of the HR world. She's an HR director. She has found human resources to be near and dear to her heart. But even closer to that, she has found a fond attachment to hiring veterans. So that's what we're going to talk about today, is what organizations need to do to attract, retain, and keep veterans. Because once people serve their country and they do their time and they hang up the boots and they hang up their dog tags, they need somebody to kind of help them transition into the civilian world. And Erin has dedicated a large part of her career in doing that. So with that said, I introduce Erin Emery. Erin, you're on?
Yeah, I'm here. It's great to be here.
Awesome. Erin, where are you from?
I am currently in Southern Maryland.
Maryland, but originally you're from Massachusetts, right?
I am, yep, for a few years. Okay.
So you went from one cold place to another.
Pretty much, yeah. We never made it to anywhere like with great weather.
Hey, Maryland's not that cold, Rick. Come on. I mean, you're sitting down there in the 125-degree heat with the beaches all around you going to Disney every day. Maryland's gorgeous.
It is, but I mean, you know, for me, 70 degrees is cold.
Yeah,
it's cold for me, so.
I got you.
Yeah, so. So, yeah, so Erin, thank you for coming on board. So today, I think you're going to give us a little inside scoop on the top 6 reasons why we should hire a veteran. So if you could just give me a little background about you. So how did you fall into human resources?
So, you know, I started my career, graduated college and started my career kind of working from the bottom up, if you will, in recruiting. I could take apart a copier, knew how to, you know, answer the phones, all that fun stuff. And over the past, you know, 20 years, been able to kind of just fell in love with recruiting specifically. And then I've worked in the defense industry for the last 20 years. So being able to work for defense contractors and have the opportunity to go speak to transitioning and or retiring veterans and kind of guiding them within their career has been pretty amazing.
Wow. Okay.
I'm not even going to lie. Someone needs to hire her to help build the Space Force. They really should. I'm just saying.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I'm just for the record, I am pro Space Force. Rick, I know you're anti Space Force, unless it's got something to do with the Death Star, but that's neither here nor there, right?
That's the only way I can go on the Space Force. As long as I can don one of those suits, I'll be great. Come on. So, all right. So, Erin, you have a fond of hiring veterans, of getting veterans acclimated back into the civilian workforce. What sparked that fire for you?
You know, I've grew up as my father's retired Navy. He's a veteran. And so I grew up in a military family. So I have a strong affiliation there, as well as just, you know, being able to, you know, I guess being able to support someone who's given, you know, their entire career to our country, being able to assist them in that transition, because so many of them just, you know, they feel lost. They have this, you know, they've had this amazing career and they're scared to death to figure out what that next step is going to be. And so being able to just kind of ease that transition and tell them, you know, it's going to be okay. And here are some steps you can take. I think that's just, that makes it worth it all.
Yeah, and trust me, from our perspective, and I can speak for JC, it's when we served in the Marine Corps together. I mean, we only did 4 years, but after 4 years in such a harsh outfit, at the end of that contract, they say, all right, you guys are leaving. You're going to go back to be civilians again. And they give us a full-fledged four-hour course on how to be a civilian again and how to acclimate to other civilians and how to put a resume together. Of course, this was way before social media. But yeah, that's from my perspective, that's something that's definitely needed. I mean, was that the same for you, JC?
Well, let's not tell a lie. That separations class, it was what it was. You know, it was a check in the box, and it was something that we all had to do, and it's something that they had to do. And they had some sincere people that were there trying to help out. But I'm going to tell you, the second that I got out, it was a lot harder than what I expected. And I think one of the hardest things for me was transitioning not just to the civilian mindset, but the civilian mindset being accepting of me. And it's great to see how society has become more overall accepting of hiring veterans in certain ways. But we still have our unique complications that we have to overcome. I mean, a lot of veterans don't accept the fact they're starting over. Let's be honest. You kind of want to pick up where you leave off. You know all the keywords and transitions and terms and things that you need. But sometimes these licensures or things that you're highly skilled in don't necessarily translate to the civilian world. Hopefully legislation changes that one of these days.
I hope so. Trust me, especially for us. For us, it was only 4 years. But can you imagine that 20-year sergeant major, that 30-year sergeant major who's just getting out? The large part of their life has been dedicated to that outfit, and now that 4-hour class. So I mean, I'm just glad we got people like Aaron out there who's helping people kind of make that transition. So Aaron, with that said, you've got your top 6 reasons to hire a veteran, right? So this is from an organization's perspective?
Absolutely, yep.
Okay, what's the first one?
So, you know, again, not necessarily in any particular order, but, you know, veterans coming out, you know, their leadership skills are stellar, right? So their leadership readiness at any level. So, you know, whether they're coming in, you know, again, someone like you guys came out at 4 years, maybe they don't have a degree, you know, still being able to come in at an entry level position, but be able to not need that hand holding versus someone coming out, you know, maybe as a, you know, a retired, you know, officer, maybe they're a retired Navy captain and, you know, being able to come in and lead a program. So they might not necessarily have the industry knowledge, but they have the leadership skills behind them to be able to, you know, take the program or take, you know, their team and run with it.
Okay. So you're saying the leadership that they bring in from the military into the organization?
Yes.
Got it. Okay. All right. So quick question for you then. Have you ever had a situation where the leadership skills just don't match? Because, you know, in the military, you've got that hierarchy type of a leadership, that top-down leadership. And now you've got the millennials in the workforce. Now you've got the Gen Xers in the workforce. And now you have a brand new type of a work ethic that's coming into the workforce. Have you ever seen a situation where those leadership skills just don't match the way they should?
I have, you know, and it's, you know, everybody brings a different spectrum of leadership skills to, you know, to their position or to an organization. So I think, you know, there's definitely some that come in, you know, wide open. Sometimes they forget to take the uniform off or forget to take that, you know, the rank off a little bit and come in and, you know, think they're still barking at, you know, those, you know, the young soldiers or sailors that are out there. And, but then there's others that come in and they have those coping skills that they're able to adapt to the, you know, the types of staff that they have working with them and able to come up with a way that they're going to be able to work with different levels within an organization.
Excellent. Okay. So that was the leadership skills. So what's second on your list?
Composure and creativity under pressure. So again, you know, you guys, from a veteran's perspective, you know, you're put in situations where you have to think on your feet. You have to be able to be, you know, creative to come up with a plan. And so taking those skills and adapting them to, you know, the industry, which again, on the spot, I can give you, you know, any within any day, you know, if you're working for a client or, you know, whichever industry you go into, you have to be able to think on your feet and be creative and, you know, like you guys are doing now, asking me questions I may not have been prepared for, right? So you have to be able to be able to adapt to that. And I think that you are veterans are trained to do that. And that's something that I think that's really positive that they bring to the workforce.
So is there a as far as all these different skills and different leadership skills that are coming from the military outfit into the civilian world, is there any kind of training that maybe the organization needs to go through, that the hiring authority, is there any training you recommend? That way they're able to be a little bit flexible with that skill set?
You know, that's a great question. I think depending on your organization and the organizational cultures, there's some companies out there that that specifically have programs, you know, for folks coming in, you know, veterans coming into their company to be able to assimilate into the company. And then there's, you know, from a management perspective, you know, giving, you know, I guess having each of the new hires and folks coming into the company, kind of training them up on different management styles and that are apt to the corporate culture. So, I mean, from a company perspective, I think each company is going to do it a little bit differently. But there's also, you know, if you're thinking big picture when it comes to maybe other government provided resources or things like that, you know, I mean, there's the Department of Veteran Affairs, Department of Labor, I think IRS has different programs that can, you know, that that will not only, you know, teach and train, help to teach and train, you know, veterans that are looking for employment, but also reach out to employers and assist them with, you know, how do we match the right types of skill sets from these veterans, as well as incentivize them to, you know, to hire veterans. So I think that, again, that's just another great resource.
Wow. So I'll tell you what, when and again, I'm speaking for myself. I don't know how JC feels about this. I know that it's just how JC said earlier. It was a weird transition for me back in the late 90s coming into the civilian world again. And one of the things that I've noticed is exactly what you said, is that it's a little bit hard to kind of take off that mindset of doing everything by the numbers. And there's a little bit, I don't want to say there's no trust in the military, but there is a lot less structured moving parts in the civilian world. Whereas you come in, just do whatever you need to do, and then that's it. Whereas in the military, you got to be somewhere 1600, then somewhere else at 1630, and then everything is 100% by the numbers. And to me, the hardest part was that was coming from an organization really machine driven, machine structured, and you go somewhere else where it's, I don't want to say we're pointing aimlessly, but it's more, we're just going by the seat of our pants and to see if this or that works. I mean, I don't know if that was the same for you, JC, when you came back into it.
Over on my end, I think one of the toughest things was trying to not just get settled back into the civilian workforce from a day to day, average, normal routine perspective. But it was also trying to find the right mentor that could bring me along to understand the emotional needs and concerns of working with a workforce that might be built a little bit differently than the diverse nature of the workforce that I was just in the service. In our unit, there weren't a lot of women. There weren't. And that's not a bad thing. It's not a good thing. It's just the way it was. A lot has changed over time. But there were a lot of cares and considerations for that I had to learn about personally, about employees that are over the age of 55, that are older, cares and concerns for women in the workforce of varying degrees of sexual orientation and preference as well. Things that we don't necessarily learn about on active duty, that when we transition into the civilian world, it's a little bit tougher. I'll tell you, a lot of veterans are in need of resources too. And I'm still one that's not the biggest fan of the VA. I'm not. I think they do a great job. I'm just not a big fan of them. And I know there's a lot of guys out there that shy away from formal help for things. As there's things that become more incentive-driven for employers to hire veterans, it'd be interesting to see if there were more transition programs in the civilian sector as an employee onboards, providing them with a more senior mentor within the organization that might have those skills or something. I don't want to go too far, and I know we've got a special guest on the line today, but just to share with you both here, because Aaron, I think you might have some insight into this too. I at one point in time, looked up to a leader that I had in the chain, and it turned out that I was getting really bad advice from this person. And later on, it was discovered, well, you know, they thought that your resume was very strong. So part of the reason they're giving you bad advice might be to hold you down. Now, that's pretty critical and shady right there. But
yeah, it is.
You need to align yourself with the right resources. And it'd be great to see some of those right resources rise to the top, right?
Yeah, absolutely. It's sad that you were aligned to, you know, someone that was trying to hold you back, because obviously you don't want that within your career. But I think that, you know, grabbing onto somebody, having a mentor, and maybe having more than one, right? Because so that way you can be able to bounce ideas off of them, and they don't necessarily have to be within that organization. Maybe they can be, you know, within other organizations. To your point, I recently had, I was working with a Navy chief recently retired, and he just got his first civilian job. And he just went through his first week. And so I messaged him on day one, at the end of day one, and I said, how was your first day? And he said, it was absolutely horrible. And I, you know, I probed him to try to figure out why. And he said, it was because I had no direction. They didn't tell me the direction to go. They just said, hey, you know, sit here and fend for yourself. And, you know, luckily his week improved. And so, you know, he'll be going back on week two, I'm sure. But again, you know, much to your point, if you're so used to that structure and now all of a sudden you have to come in to a world where this, you should know what you're doing, that makes it really difficult.
Oh, absolutely. And that, or maybe stepping into a world where they expect you to take the lead. And then when you take the lead, maybe you take it way too far. And then the senior executive's feelings get hurt or something like that along the way as you're ready to build the future, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
So, Aaron, what's next on your list when it comes to hiring a veteran?
So, number three would be to, you know, veterans, they understand the big picture, but they don't forget to pay attention to the details, right? Mm. So, again, from a training perspective, you know, you have to understand your mission. You have to understand the overall direction that you're going, but you have to also understand that every move that you make, you know, determines the direction that mission is going to take. And so putting them into, you know, from a team environment or project environment, you know, making sure that all of the little details aren't forgotten. Again, I think it's a great asset that they bring to any organization.
And that goes to what I was saying earlier. The hardest part is transitioning from that structured organization into the kind of fly by the seat of your pants. So I agree with that one 100%.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. What else you got?
All right. So number four would be a team player, which I think just goes without saying, right? You guys are from a veteran perspective. You are, you know, from day one in boot camp, you know, you have to work with each other. You have to, you know, you have to become a family. You have to, you have to trust each other. And so, and sometimes in industry, you know, finding a good, you know, finding a company with a culture with that really rewards that team environment, sometimes that's hard. So being able to play well with others in the sandbox, if you will, I think that's definitely a great asset.
Mm. Yeah, that one, especially from boot camp, it's at least for me, when I went to boot camp just as a teenage kid from Orlando, Florida, going into Parris Island, South Carolina, it was a wake up call for me where we got to, I guess, play in the sandbox, per se, more like sand fleas, right? With people from all over the nation. I mean, we got people from New York, from Kentucky. I mean, all different diverse backgrounds and ways of talking and ways of handling things. Yeah, it really does teach you that piece. So I'm with you there. Definitely with you there. All right, what's next?
So number five would be uncompromising integrity, which I don't even know if that needs a definition, right? If you say you're going to be somewhere, you're going to be there. If I tell you to be there at 8 a.m., you show up at 7:40. You know, if you say you're going to follow through, you follow through. And again, organizations, I think, with how the, I think you mentioned it earlier, you know, with just maybe, you know, with how the employees are changing and maybe the culture is changing and maybe not everybody has a strong work ethic, if you will. being able to bring that type of skill set back into the marketplace is so needed.
So for this one, I'll tell you this. This is one that I use at work every single day. So I tell all of my employees that it's to me, I have to be able to trust you. If I can't trust you, I don't need you on my team. There's no skill set that's more valuable than me being able to trust you because of your integrity. So for me, I tell everybody on my team, it's if you make a mistake, any mistake, and you know about it, I better hear from you first. I need to hear from you first, have the integrity and the backbone to come to me and say, hey, Rick, I messed up. Here's how I messed up. And obviously, I'll talk to you, trying to figure out how you messed up. Let's fix it. Let's learn from it, right? Which that's why I encourage everybody to have that, to take calculated risk. Obviously, if you keep making those same mistakes over and over again, we're going to have a different disciplinary conversation. But if you have the integrity and the backbone and the honesty to just come up and say, here's how I messed up. I want to learn from it and move forward. That's something that's really, really, really big for me and for my team.
How about you? Sometimes it comes down to the baby steps, right? Really? Baby steps.
Yeah.
So maybe you take something small like the knife hand and ask him to sheathe it. Please put the knife hand away at work. We don't need it. And let's just focus on that one small thing and take those baby steps and incrementally move them up into something else. You know, at the end of the day, we've all got a certain fair high level of integrity. We would like to think, let's keep those rose-colored glasses on and remain positive through the process. But sometimes my point is just start small and then go larger from there. That's all.
So, Aaron, speaking of knife hands, I think the next episode is going to be workplace violence. So I want you to be a part of that episode because I don't want people to listen to this thinking just knife hand left and right. And folks, for those of you listening who don't know what knife hand is, Google General Mattis and you'll find out what that means. So go ahead, Aaron, back to you.
He's an amazing man, by the way.
He really is. Yeah, he really
thank
is.
You.
So number six, habitual goal orientation, right? You know, veterans are able to quickly assess a simulation, able to form a plan. And I think, you know, a lot of these different reasons are kind of interrelated. But, okay, so again, you know, we're talking about habitual goal orientation and being able to quickly assess, a situation and be able to form a plan. And just going back to, again, those basic skills that you learn when you're active duty, that, you know, you have a mission, you have a focus, and that at the end of the day, that's what matters. And, you know, making sure that, that you accomplish that. So again, going from a project or going into a team environment, whatever it might be on the industry side, you know, that's where their focus is, and they're able to make, you know, accomplish the project or get the product out the door, you know, hit that mission. And that's truly, I think I keep saying it, you know, it's such a valuable asset, but that's what's going to make the team productive. And I think that that's really important.
Absolutely. Yeah. Especially when you got that mindset of, at least in the Marine Corps, mission accomplishment is first, second is troop welfare. So yeah, absolutely. You got to have that, that goal orientation, that goal oriented mindset, which, it's, I don't want to say that it's a negative thing, because this is something that I have seen. When somebody comes in who has a military background and the boss says, hey, we got to get ABC done by this day, and this person comes in and just attacks it head on, that sometimes it could put some other people off and people kind of work just enough not to get fired. And who's this guy coming in and attacking everything and all hard charging? And next thing you know, you get nicknamed Rudy, right? It's not every day. It's Super Bowl Sunday, right? So that's why I mentioned earlier, it's not a bad thing, but it's really important to have that training in there for the organizations to kind of help the veterans to be a little bit more flexible and understanding in what they need to do. Now, like JC said earlier, it's really good to have a mentor, right? A mentor, somebody to help that veteran assimilate also to civilian life, to where they don't go too hard for people who are not that used to that type of mentality. But again, it's going to be training on both sides. That way, both sides can have some sense of understanding and flexibility on what to do when they get to that workforce. I'm not shining on it. I'm just saying it's really crucial to have that out there. But most definitely, it's when you get a veteran on board, you get a skill set that no college can replicate. Nothing can get you. Only hardcore experience in an outfit that that's really, really, really filled with integrity. So thank you for that. So with that said, we talked about the top six reasons to hire a veteran. So now, if that's not an incentive enough, there are some incentives for organizations who hire veterans, correct?
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. So what do you tell us about those?
So again, we talked, I mentioned a little bit about, the Department of Veteran Affairs, where they have incentives where you can get reimbursed up to 50% of the veteran's salary during this program that they may go through. They'll provide them with additional training, any expenses that might be incurred for the cost of instruction, supplies, equipment, uniforms. I mean, there's so many things out there that can, that can help to assist. You can, there's a tax credit through the IRS called the Work Opportunity Tax Credit. And again, there's so many other resources. I'm not necessarily an expert on every resource that is out there for folks, but if you Google, just ways to, employ transitioning military or employing, veterans, there is a ton of resources out there available to employers to be able to look at.
I've got a real big question for you. I've been sitting on this one all show so far. So a veteran gets out, they're working on their resume, they maybe had some assistance through their transition program while they were active duty or reserves or whatnot. They've got that resume put together, is heading over to the hands of the HR directors. Are you frowning upon, maybe not you individually, but as HR in general, for both of you, do you look for a resume that's much more specific to the actual job at hand? Or if you see that someone has many different traits and trades and have volunteered their time or maybe earned medals or awards for different volunteer services over a span of time, are you looking for less detail about that and more position-oriented resumes? So that if someone's applying for that general HR generalist position, you want to make sure that they have the criteria for that, or you're good with seeing a 12-page resume with everything that they've done for the past 10, 15 years on there as a veteran.
So, right. So one of the things, and I sit on an employer panel locally to the base that is in our local area, and so I can speak for at least the 5 or 6 employers that I sit with. And one of the things that we kind of talk about is having a master copy resume. So kind of almost like having an encyclopedia of everything you've done within your career. And so then being able to, put all that together. And then when you're going to apply for a specific position, you have this library of all these skills you've done over the past 20 plus years. And then you can pull those together to create a resume that's going to be targeted to that position. Because that resume is the first thing that's going to sell you to a future employer. That's, they don't have a face to look at. They don't have your personality yet. They just have words on a piece of paper. So being able to I would say targeting it to that specific position is ideal. Now, a lot of times I will get resumes for folks who apply to a position, but maybe they missed the mark. They're just not quite qualified. But, I will take that resume and look at it and go, okay, what else do I have? Where else, if they're not a fit for this specific, logistics position, maybe they're a fit more for this quality management position or, configuration management position. So I'll take it and kind of look to see where else they can be a fit. Or, sometimes too, I'll reach out to them. If I know that they have a great skill set, but they're just not quite a fit for what I need right now, I'll reach out to them and say, hey, I got your resume. Is there anything else that might be missing? Is there anything else that that we could take from there to kind of sell you to the hiring manager, if you will, and sell that skill set to be able to, to get you kind of in the neck, in the door. So then your personality and your, that interview is kind of the next step, right? You can sell it from there.
Aaron, this is why you coming on this show is important. I mean, exactly what you said there, because I have seen with other hiring authorities that when you – exactly what JC said, if you put way too much military experience on your resume, it could be a turnoff for some hiring authorities who are just not familiar with it, right? And they don't want – Gunnery Sergeant Hartman coming in from Full Metal Jacket, you know, dictating everything to everyone on your team. But there, from what I have seen, there is a lack of understanding of how those skills can be translated, how they come across on a resume. So that's why you coming on here and kind of giving that shedding that light on that dark corner when it comes to hiring people with that in their resume is crucial. So what you just said is spot on. I mean, to have an encyclopedia or a Google per se of what your skill set are and just kind of transferring those tailored to the position you're looking for is spot on advice. So yeah, I'm with that.
All right. So with the push and the advent and the further propagation of applicant tracking softwares, and you've got hard coded terms new advent AI and some of the current systems in place filter out these resumes. And one of the criteria that you currently have written in your job descriptions as HR director or manager, leader, senior executive is specifically stating that we want to make sure that this applicant has that bachelor's or master's degree. And now you have a master sergeant, a gunnery sergeant, someone getting out after 20 years of service that has the qualifications and criteria, but maybe doesn't have that piece of paper. Is there a valid fear and concern that they're not going to be seen, even though they're potentially even overqualified for some positions, due to the way that these softwares filter out the resumes with that educational requirement and making sure that that paper is on file?
Yeah, I absolutely do think that there's a chance that they would get looked over. I think some of it's situational where – you know, I have positions that I can take a substitution. So if the person doesn't have a degree, I can take years of experience and then they would be qualified. But some positions just don't allow for that. You know, in the government contracting world, if the contract in that labor category says you must have a master's degree, I can't get around that. Right. So there's certain things that I can't do. But from a system perspective, I mean, you're right. Unfortunately, depending on the applicant tracking system that a company's using, you may, you know, be overlooked for specific positions if there's requirements in there and it's hard coded and you can't get past the initial screening.
So for a veteran that's transitioning, should they feel completely defeated by artificial intelligence and applicant tracking and electronic means, or are there other outlets out there where they could still speak to people face to face and make positive things happen?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, you have your job fairs are one of them, and there are a ton of job fairs that are nationwide that specifically focus on veteran hiring. There's there's quite a few just industry wise from a transition perspective. A lot of the transition programs themselves have job fairs. So there's definitely, that way they can go in and actually, have that conversation with a potential employer. But whether it's job fairs or social media, LinkedIn, being able to, if you see a position or you see something, position posted, and you can reach out to the recruiter and send them a note and say, hey, I saw your position. I have everything I need except I don't have that degree. Is there any way that, is there any substitution for that? Or can I chat with you a little bit further? So don't be afraid to reach out. Don't be afraid to use the social networking pieces. Mm-hmm. I think any recruiter that is on LinkedIn or HR professional, typically they will accept just about any connection on LinkedIn, simply because that's our job, right? Our job is to network with folks. Which leads to a whole other topic. Don't forget to network. And you have, when you're looking for a position, you can go to, let everybody know that you're transitioning, 6 degrees of separation. We always joke in Southern Maryland, it's one, because everyone knows each other, let folks know if you spend most of your time, at the soccer field with the kids or at church or, wherever, let them know, because they may be the hiring manager. They may know the person that has a new position coming open. They can speak for your character. So again, that networking piece is really key as well.
We talk about LinkedIn. I know, like after the most recent Star Wars film, didn't you look up George Lucas on LinkedIn and try to network with him, Rick? It was something like that, wasn't it?
Yeah, but I got shot down. Like,
yeah, that didn't work out. That didn't work out for you. Didn't work out for you. Hey, aside from just veterans, we're also talking about military spouses. And there's a huge push right now for hiring military spouses. There's allegedly going to be some programs through the Department of Defense and others on trying to specifically get military spouses through a employment partnership program hired into civilian workforce, maybe not necessarily government-funded or sponsored jobs, but even just a push to help them out through the process. Do you have any insight, Aaron, on the military spouse employment partnership programs or some of what's taking place for military dependents in the workforce?
So I don't have a lot of experience specifically to maybe any, you know, anything that's going on from a government initiative perspective. But again, I know that, you know, working with the transition programs and, you know, I've seen, you know, I've had spouses in the transition classes because it's just as important for them to be able to, you know, they've spent their spouse's entire career, you know, traveling and following them. And we were, you know, we always remind them during the transition, panels too, that, you know, don't forget that your spouse spent, you know, the last 20 plus years following your career. So maybe now it's time for them to be able to focus on theirs. Make sure you encourage them to be able to go after, whether it's going after a certification, a degree, you know, whatever it might be. But yeah, I think that that's extremely important. And, you know, again, it just helps with that, you know, again, from a team perspective, if you're, you know, being able to support your spouse and knowing it's tough, right? Because if you look at a resume for a military spouse, again, I can see if I look at a resume and I can tell where folks have worked, you can tell it's a military spouse, right? Because there are different bases or different locations, but not everybody in industry is, knows about that. So to them, maybe they're just job hopping or, they can't hold down a position. Well, it's really not true, right? Because they're forced every 2 years, 2 or 3 years to move on. So again, just being able to have a better understanding of the type of environment a military spouse has, I don't want to say grown up, it's not the right word, but has gone through the military career, and knowing that they're the ones that have held that family together while there's deployments or, they don't necessarily always have the flexibility or the support system, and trying to keep a full-time position is a balance. So making sure that employers are aware of those types of situations as well.
And the Department of Labor, they did recently launch a web portal. Just to let everyone out there know this one, please feel free to check it out. You could just Google if you desire Department of Labor. It's license. How's it go? It's a license and credential portability type thing. You can figure out what the state laws are in each one of the states across the country and the portability of your licensures and credentials for military spouses, so that if you do have a license or a credential for a specific, say, a therapist or something in a particular state, and you need to transition that to another state, there are some things on the books through the Department of Labor that can help with that portability and transition process. I'm going to segue from that to one last thing. Rick, I'm still jumping all over you. This one's for both of you, though. How do you see the future going, though, as far as translating? I was mentioning Department of Labor and the portability of licenses for individuals, but when we're talking about skills, assets, and abilities that were learned during your service, do you feel that there will ever become a point in time when those relevant experiences, maybe say you served 4 years in the Air Force, at the end of your 4 years, the education, experience, and everything could be equivalent to a bachelor's degree, and then so on and so forth through translating military service to actual degree equivalencies in the civilian workforce?
That's a really good question. I think, you know, there's definitely, again, when I, you know, we have certain positions, labor categories that will allow for substitution. So if there isn't, you know, if you don't have a bachelor's degree, you could have 8 years of work mm-hmm. experience that would equal that bachelor's degree. So from a qualification perspective, sometimes there's a little flexibility there. I know that there's a lot of different universities out there that will actually take military service mm-hmm. and apply it towards degreed programs. So giving you credit towards a degree. So I know that that's been very helpful for a lot of folks. simply because they don't have, you know, 4 years to get a bachelor's degree. So sometimes it cuts off a lot of that time that it would take to do that. So I think there's an opportunity, but I think we're kind of still far away.
It's from what I have seen, Erin, it's evolving, right? And it was slowly chipping away at it, because what a bachelor's degree means today is completely different to what it meant 30, 40 years ago. So as we evolve in, well, as humans, as we evolve in the workforce and as we evolve with different generations and work ethics, what we do in the military gets more specialized. And those jobs becomes more specialized, they become more transferable into the civilian world, right? So I see more transferable skills to take the place of education outside of the sciences and to be a lawyer or a doctor. Outside of that, there's a lot of skill sets that are more easily transferable. So with that said, as we progress on in time, as far as people who are being hired and what kind of skill sets are needed in the workforce, I do see that necessity of a traditional college degree to be slowly chipped away and being replaced by experience. And I would say in the next 5 to 10 years, we are going to see more of what Erin is saying, that we are going to substitute more time and experience in that service for those degrees. So yeah, definitely a good question. Now, there's something I wanted to kind of mention that Erin mentioned earlier that we shouldn't just, you know, shine over. And that one thing is about the spouses, right? The spouses that also serve time. And from in the spirit of hiring somebody and keeping them for I mean, obviously, once you spend a lot of time, money, and effort to bring somebody in, you want to make sure they stay with you. So how do you make sure they stay with you, especially from a veteran's perspective, is you don't focus just on the veteran. You focus on the whole family unit. So if you see a veteran that just got out of the military and is looking for a job, from a hiring authority point of view, it would behoove of the organizations to start focusing on that spouse as well and what kind of skills that the spouse has and trying to get a job for that spouse as well. Not necessarily within the organization, but as a recruiting manager, as an HR director, whatever the case may be, you should have some kind of a relationship in the community with other organizations to where you can reach out. If you hire that veteran and you know the spouse has a skill set that recruiter down the street has a need for, you reach out to that person. Because when that veteran sees, wow, this organization is really not just focusing on me, they're focusing on me as a family unit, that is going to go a long way with that veteran to stick longer with you, and because it will create that loyalty. So again, from a hiring authority perspective, it would be a good idea to focus on that entire family unit for that veteran. That way they can stick with you for the long haul.
And at that, we are currently nearing 45 minutes in this episode of HR Talk.
Are we?
I'd like to toss it back over to Erin. Just to recap real quick, the high-level key points, those 6 key points that we're identifying on, and then go around the room here for final thoughts.
Yeah, again, just you know, the top 6 reasons I think it's really important to hire veterans is their leadership skills, their ability to be creative under pressure, understanding the big picture and not forgetting the details, team players, you know, strong integrity, and again, they're exceptionally goal oriented and being able to you know, assess a situation and form a plan quickly. So those are just 6. I am sure that there are a million more positive qualities to hiring veterans, but you know, the show isn't that long, so I think that it's to me, you know, working with veterans over the last 20 plus years has been an amazing opportunity to meet some, you know, great people and see the value that they bring to the industry.
Ricky, over to you. Final thoughts.
So final thoughts, I second what Erin just said. It's just those six things are not exclusive. I mean, there's a lot more. I guess what I want to say for the hiring authority is just to be open, be understanding on what that skill set translate, and just understand that it's a hard transition from that military outfit into the civilian world. So just reach out to anybody out there who's been there, done that before, and have that person be quote unquote the mentor for the hiring authority to make sure you are reading into those skill sets.
And with that being said, I'd like to jump in and do a huge thank you going out to you, Aaron, for being on here today.
Yes.
Just would already like to pre-extend the offer for you to come back on anytime, talk about any new endeavors. If you want to highlight other key areas of focus, would love to have you back on. It's been my pleasure. If anyone would desire to reach you, would you like to be contacted, or maybe they'll just hit us up and we'll reach you privately? I'm not sure if you want to give out your numbers or anything. It's over to you.
You know, they can just, for now, they can just reach out to you, and then you guys can vet them. Let's do it that way.
Very good. Done deal. And with that being said, Rick, what are the best ways to reach us?
Several ways. You can go ahead and reach us on Facebook. We have HR Talk Podcast on Facebook and Podcast HR on Podcast HR Talk on Twitter. Just if you have any questions, you have any show ideas, go ahead and hit us up through there, and we'll be in contact.
With 64,000 people that we touched on the last episode and only 100 followers after the rebranding like 2 weeks ago on Facebook, it doesn't feel good to me right now, Rick. But we do have a lot of people that are picking up on the show.
Big thank you
to our friends out in Seattle, Washington, and Vancouver. For tuning in, chiming in, and also contributing. They are looking forward to some more words on AI in the HR world, which
That's
I keep
next.
Promising is going to be something that we tackle one of these days soon. And on behalf of Rick and Aaron, I'm JC. It's been my pleasure to be here for you. Drive safe, everyone. Have a good night.